You're listening to Trek FM.
This is Robert Picardo, the emergency medical hologram from Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Everybody at home and welcome. This is To The Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me as always is...
Tristan Riddell.
Tristan, we are back to a more virtual recording status this week. After our wonderful time in Vegas, we've had a little bit of time to breathe now and relax. Oh, sort of. No, actually, I'm totally lying. It's been pure chaos since we got back. But I am glad to be sitting in my home office. You are in your home office. We are recording once again. We are taking on TTJ. And I think we're doing something very appropriate. Because while we were in Vegas, we did an episode with the guys of Earl Grey and did an episode on the fly where we took one of their ideas about basically writing a Captain Proton story and we turned it into a full episode all about Captain Proton. So this week, guess what we're doing? We're doing a commentary of Bride of Chaotica.
When you and I were talking about what we needed to do, we just had Chaotica on the brain. And we're like, okay, what are we going to do? We haven't done a commentary in a while. We've never done a commentary on Chaotica. We have to do something fun, so let's do this.
Yes, I believe I put out that request specifically. I told Tristan, I am really in the mood for something lighthearted, funny, and entertaining. I don't want to get heavy this week. My brain just can't handle it. I'm sorry. I can't. I just can't.
Yes. Yes. This will be a lot of fun, and we're going to get to it soon, but we have some new reviews.
Yes. Oh my goodness. We are so behind on iTunes. We have not checked this in a little while because of the whole, I don't know, Star Trek Las Vegas thing, plus... we took a week off here and there. Our summer, as you know, has been crazy. And so we have a backlog of people to thank who've written us reviews and left 5 stars in the US iTunes store. So here we go. We have to thank Jeff Roki, Joe the Bio Teacher, love that name, Star Trek Star, Arctic Squirrel, and Astral Touch. Those are all great usernames. Those are really good, you guys. Thank you all so much for leaving us 5 stars, leaving us awesome rave reviews. We are so happy to be bringing you content that you enjoy, especially if you're out there commuting. I know all about that. That's pretty much my podcast listening these days, is in the car. And so if we make your day a little bit brighter, we're happy to do it. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, Joe, the bio teacher, actually left us a really nice review on my other show, Nerd Nuptial, as well. So,
hey,
this guy's following me around.
Stalker, but in a good way.
In a good way, yeah.
We like it when you stalk our podcasts.
All right, well, should we get this started? I love starting commentaries right away.
Well, let's just do this thing. Yeah, let's go. We'll count you down 3, 2, 1, go. And then if you are following along with us, cue up your Netflix right now. 3, 2, 1, go. And here
fantastic
we are.
Opening music.
It is. And I have mine on mute, so I'm missing out, actually. Maybe I'll turn up my sound just a little bit. I usually stick to the subtitles to avoid the distraction. But in this case, I'm thinking, yes.
Jeez, I've forgotten how huge her rack was. Oh, am I not? I'm not supposed to say that. Sorry.
Yeah, you said that out loud, Tristan.
I did. I said that out loud. I'm sorry. It's just there are certain times when, like, they usually try to shy away from that in Voyager, except for Seven of Nine, of course. But, like, all the other times.
Yeah, that is all her territory usually.
But how would you feel playing this on the holodeck? Like, say that you had the pantheon of the stuff that we've seen on Voyager in the holodeck library.
Mm-hmm.
Would you play this? Would you be like, oh, sweet. You're like, I'm totally gonna play Captain Proton.
Am I gonna play Captain Proton? Abso-fraggin-lutely. I would even be willing to be somebody's sidekick and be Buster. but I'm not going to be just sitting there screaming.
Oh, no, I'd never assume that. No, I would totally be Buster too. Like, I would want to watch Captain Proton do his thing.
Right. Or, dare I say it, if I wanted to get all dressed up, maybe I would come in as Queen Arachnia. Maybe.
I could see you pulling off a really cool Queen Arachnia.
Hamming it up. We're going to see Kate Mulgrew have a really good time eventually. If I was in the right mood, yeah, you bet I could definitely take advantage.
Yeah. I think I really just want Captain Proton's jacket.
Is that it? I mean, it is a cool jacket.
It's kind of like, it reminds me of Indiana Jones's jacket.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
Except for, of course, the plating on the front and on the back.
That's a little different.
For his rocket pack. So when I was doing some research about this episode, one thing that they said that they really tried to focus on was as little action on the bridge as possible.
Yes.
Because apparently there was a fire and there was fire damage to the bridge.
Yes, they were trying to fix it. And I remember oh so briefly when the show was airing, hearing about that or seeing it in Star Trek Communicator or something. And that was the real reason why they were trying to formulate this story. Because with Knight, Captain Proton was a huge hit. Everybody wanted more, especially Robert Duncan McNeil. He was just chewing at the bit to do more Captain Proton. And so the writers said, okay, what can we do here? And then when the whole bridge fire happened, they saw that as the opportunity. And boom, here we go. This is what happened as a result of a fire. What I want to know is what happened on the bridge? Did they get some pyrotechnics out of control or something with an exploding console? How do you set the fire or how do you set the bridge on fire?
Well, you do have a lot of production lights on the bridge, and it's very easy to start a fire that way.
That's true. Those lights do get hot, don't they?
Oh, yeah, very much. I was in film class one time, and the professor was teaching us how to do three-key lighting. And he put the barn doors a little too close to the bulb, and it heated up so much that it actually melted some of the metal, and it dropped onto the floor, and you see this huge puff of smoke just go up, and then like a minute later, it was already hard again.
Wow.
And so there was no way to get that out of the carpet. It was actually really funny.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's welded on there, basically.
Yeah, but also extremely dangerous because what if somebody's hand was underneath that, you know, when that happened?
Oof. No, thank you.
Yeah.
Ouchie, ouch, ouch. Okay, so I guess that's a huge testament as to how dangerous sets can be.
Well, that's the thing. And also, I don't know. Okay, so Shatner and Nimoy both suffer and now suffered.
Mm-hmm.
From tinnitus.
Yes.
And that was because, I don't know if it happened at the same time with them, but I know that this happened with Shatner. I don't know if it happened with Nimoy at the same time either. But a light fell down from the ceiling, and it landed right next to Shatner, and it was so loud that it damaged his eardrums, and then he was cursed for the rest of his life to have tinnitus.
Wow.
And so, like, it's no joke on the movie set. Like, that, like, when you're on a movie set or a TV set or whatever kind of set, like, it's always, like, and this is what they taught us in school and what I try to teach in my professional life when I have interns and stuff like that, it's always safety, 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 safety. That's why they go over the top to be as safe as possible because it is so easy to get hurt with that much machinery and that much electrical equipment.
And I suppose when things are going well, you take it for granted just how easy it all can seem. But one thing goes wrong and somebody is paying for that for the rest of their life. So that's pretty drastic.
The staggering thing is that the suicide rate for people with tinnitus is through the roof.
Oh, yeah. I can just imagine the constant ringing in your ears, how horrible that would be. Yeah.
It's insane. But anyway, happier things. Yeah. So in the, like, we missed something a little bit ago, like Paris was talking with Kim about, like, Kim was saying, like, hey, this, you know, this planet looks familiar. Planet 10 or Planet X looks like and such before. And I love the commentary on TOS where like Harry's like, this also looks like this and looks like this. And Tom's just like, sets were expensive.
Yeah. And it's actually kind of a funny little in joke because it was the same planetscape they used in the episode before.
Right.
to save a little bit on the budget. So there we go.
So perfect to call that out. You know, that's the thing, is that like if you're gonna if you're gonna do that, make it a joke, you know, like
right, own it.
Yeah, we're rewatching Raising Hope. The girl and I are rewatching Raising Hope.
Okay.
And it's a really funny sitcom. It had its ups and downs, but they break the fourth wall a lot, where it's not so much like they look at the camera like Frank Underwood or anything like that, but they have meta knowledge of their show certain times, where, you know, like they will, when they do something, they say, like there was one episode where they got the neighbors through their baby monitor, and they're like, what are you doing? He's like, it's okay, you know, I've seen this on Modern Family and countless other sitcoms, you know. And it was just like they had tons of stuff like that. And like one person was upset and they're like, what's wrong with her? And she's like, and they're like, oh, her favorite show got moved from Tuesday nights to Friday nights, and they just got moved to Friday nights. And so it was just filled. I love stuff like that.
That's so cool. I've never watched that show, by the way.
No, it's good. The first season is genius, and then the second season's okay. Third season sucks, but the fourth season picks kind of back up.
Hmm. I gotcha.
Now, you can always tell the shake that was done in post versus shake that was done actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was definitely not the actors doing that.
Yeah.
They are quite still.
I love that they have a periscope on a spaceship.
It's one of my favorite things about the Captain Proton set.
Now, while I was, you know, reading, you know, everybody, like, they have all these quotes about what people thought of the episode and everything like that. And it started getting a little monotonous because the producers, the writers, the set designers, the actors, they're all saying, oh, I love it. It's great. Had such a great time.
One person did not, though, right? Was it Ken Biller? I don't remember exactly. It's been a little while.
Yeah, Ken Biller did not like Kate Mulgrew's performance.
Yeah.
Well, no, he did like Kate Mulgrew's performance, but he thought that there was a point in the story where the captain got what she needed to progress the story, but she didn't stop being Arachnia and become captain again. She would just continue to play the role. And I just thought that was because she was into it.
Well, yeah, I think it... especially when you're not used to cutting loose like that, you can kind of get a little carried away. You bury yourself in the part, so to speak. He said that it got to be a little over the top. I don't know about that. This whole thing is over the top, and that's the way it's supposed to be. That's what's fun about it.
Yeah, that sounded like... That's the thing, is like, did that really need to be said?
No. No.
I mean, no. I don't think so. I don't think so.
Nah, you're outvoted. Sorry.
But one individual, James Meese, he loved the episode, and he was really pissed off that they didn't get nominated for an Emmy, at least in art direction.
I am really shocked that this episode did not get nominated for any awards for costuming, set design. I mean, really? Come on. This episode is so worthy of all the awards. It's a real shame it got overlooked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they did a great job of making sure that things looked really good in black and white, and the detail on the costumes, especially for Queen Arachnia. I mean, wow. Come on.
Now, have you, like, I know that have you seen all of Enterprise yet?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I couldn't remember where you were in that, or if you stopped or anything.
No, I watched the series and finished it probably a good year and a half ago now.
Okay. Well, do you remember the episode Cogenitor? It's one of my favorites.
Oh, yes. I love that episode.
They actually reference a science fiction film called The Bride of Chaotica in it.
Do they? I don't remember that.
Yeah, they do. It's funny. It's such an awesome callback.
My memory is awful, but that's fantastic.
Yeah. It's so funny.
That's fantastic. You know, one of my favorite things about Star Trek Las Vegas, yeah, I'm still on that.
And we will be for quite some time, so strap
Yeah, in. I think so. One of my favorite costumes to see always is people cosplaying from Bride of Chaotica, whether it's Arachnia or, you know what, it just occurred to me though, I have not seen a Satan's Robot in a long time. I might have seen one in 2013, but not since. Highly underrated. Now, granted, it might be a little hard to see. but yeah. It would be pretty cool. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, we did see a great we did see a great Arachnia in what's his name? Who's the main evil guy? What's his name?
Okay, seriously? We're both brain farting on this?
I know, we're blanking so bad right now.
This, oh my god.
It's Dr. Chaotica. Jeez.
Jeez. Okay, and the listeners just turned this off. Yeah. Rightfully so, guys. I'm so sorry.
But yeah, like we saw a great pair of, you know, like we saw Queen Arachnia and Dr. Chaotica and everything like that. So
yeah, we saw a good pair for this year. And then I've seen really good Arachnias in years past.
I had a cosplay snafu in Vegas where a woman comes up and she's dressed in a black outfit with blue patches.
Oh, I remember this.
Yeah, you were with me and Matt was with me and I saw her from a distance and I pointed her out and I said, "Fantastic Parisi Squares cosplay." And then she turns back to me and she's like, "This is Balana's outfit from Extreme Risk." I felt like such an ass. Like I didn't even say anything. I just like you guys went up to her and talked about how awesome it was. I just walked away. I just kept walking.
Yeah, you were like, nope, I'm walking.
I was so embarrassed. And I was like, not only did I get it wrong, I got a Balana cosplay wrong.
Sacrilege. Pure sacrilege. I mean, she had the ridges and everything. Yeah, but it was great cosplay. All right. Now, there's some really good scenes in this episode. This is... I'm not sure where it fits in my top three, but it's in the top three just because I love coffee and I love Janeway's obsession with coffee. And the little reaction she's going to give very shortly here is so priceless.
Yes.
Here we go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is so perfect. It's
the coffee orgasm. Yeah, Neelix can't even look.
It's so funny. It's like he averts his eyes because she's clearly having an enjoy.
Yeah, there's just, he can't, it's like, he needs to give her privacy, basically.
It's so funny. And that's the thing is like, even if you're just listening in your cars, you know exactly what look we're talking about.
Right. If you've seen this episode, you know what we're talking about. That's the beauty of this thing is we have 20 something years to have watched all these episodes. How many times?
I really want Neelix's apron because I need to get
too.
I need to get a crazy apron and then put a comm badge on it. Like, that's what I need to do.
That would be very cool. Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to do Neelix cosplay, but I really do like the apron. I think StarTrek.com needs to get on that for merchandising. I don't think they have much in terms of, like, kitchen-esque wardrobe-type things. Like, an apron. They should, though. Do a Neelix apron? Are you kidding me? I would buy that, even if it's way overpriced.
You know, it always pissed me off that she didn't take the coffee with her.
I'm surprised she didn't. Like, come on.
Why wouldn't she take the coffee with her?
I don't know. Maybe she just swigged the rest of it really fast before she left. We just didn't see it.
No, but that's the thing is that we saw Neelix pick it up and like drink the rest of it.
Yeah. Well, that ain't right.
No, it's weird. It's weird. It's weird.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Now, here's the thing is like we're seeing a lot of bridge stuff.
We really are. For as much as they were trying not to be on the bridge, I'm guessing it's Harry's station that's burned here because it's about the last thing that we haven't seen.
Yeah, Harry's station and the view screen.
But there it is in the background.
Have we seen the view screen area yet? Like, have we seen what they would be seeing? I don't think we have.
Not in this scene. Maybe earlier? I don't know, though. I don't think so. Maybe that was it.
And that's the thing, though, is that you could easily just grab some stock footage of the, you know, of the view screen and just plop it in there, right?
Front and center view and then insert the whatever's on the screen. Yeah, it's true. You could work that if you had to.
Just make sure, like, just match up Tom's hairstyle and you'll be fine.
I love it.
So as far as, like, Tim Russ talked about how much he loved doing this episode. Because he said that it gave him the ability to do some humor, you know, get off the bridge, and be in an element that his character isn't normally in.
No, and in fact, he's a little bit of a fish out of water here because Yeah. Tuvok is usually so straightforward. Something like Chaotica kind of just goes against his entire way he sees the world. You know what I mean? Like, he and Tom, their brainwaves are on completely different patterns here. So this is an interesting little intersection they have between the two.
Constance Goodhart. I always felt like that was a Bond name.
It does sound like one, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Only it needs to be maybe, I don't know, a little more perverted somehow.
Yeah. Dr. Goodhead, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
That's seriously a Bond name. Like, that is a Bond girl's name. It is.
Okay,
like,
I don't really watch James Bond. It's not my thing.
I didn't just make that up. Like, that's a real thing.
Okay, well, I knew about, like, Pussy Galore and
oh,
stuff
yeah.
like that.
Everybody knows Pussy Galore.
Yeah, how can you not? That's my reaction, too. A burned-out resistor? A what?
Yeah, a what?
It's a whole new language of technobabble.
Yeah,
looks like a light bulb.
Tubes and everything. Yeah.
So funny.
I love how dry Tuvok is. He's just I think Tuvok doesn't get enough credit. I think so many people call him a wooden Vulcan and not as good as Spock, mm-hmm. but it's just I think he has a very underrated performance because there's so much subtlety in his acting that I think so many people choose to ignore.
Right, or simply do not see, period.
Yeah.
They don't see the nuance. I think it's a very delicate craft.
Now, if you were Satan's robot in Vegas, would you be battle-damaged robot or would you be normal robot?
Ooh, you know, would be kind of fun to try and do both on different days.
Oh, like the first day you're normal, second day you have battle damage?
Right. That would be pretty cool, actually.
That'd be awesome.
If I did cosplay, I might go for that. However, I'm not nearly crafty enough to really actually pull that off. I'd be more like Pinterest fail cosplay.
Whenever I told people that I was going to Vegas for a Star Trek convention, every single time, and I mean this, 100% of the time, when I told people I was going to Vegas, they would ask me, are you dressing up? 100% of the time. Now, I am not making fun of people who cosplay at all. I think it's awesome if you do. I love taking pictures of you and with you guys.
Yeah.
But for some reason, when you talk to normies, they look at you. They want to make fun of you. Like, they want to laugh at you if you
is
say
that
yes.
It?
Yeah.
They
I
want
really
to laugh at the fact
it.
That maybe you're going to dress up as your favorite character or what have you.
Yes. Yes.
Well, they can just suck off.
I really do think that's why. I honestly do. Ugh.
Yeah, and what's it to them? I mean, if you're out there having fun,
yeah,
I don't know. What are you going to get out of them making fun of you? Yeah, screw off.
I love Seven's contempt for this whole thing. I just tell in her voice.
It's so appropriate, though. Why in the world would she be halfway interested in this?
Oh, I know. And it was so, like, in Night, I remember when... like, Tom tried to get Seven involved in the holodeck program. I'm just like, really, Tom? Like you really think that you're going to get Seven involved in Captain Proton? So funny. Yeah, it's a... what do you think? Like, I'm sure that they had a lot of fun writing this dialogue. You know, like, Chaotica's mm-hmm. dialogue and Arachnia's dialogue. Like, do you think that, from your perspective, would you have fun with that?
Oh, I would think so. Yeah, in any way, shape, or form, you're taking on something a little different, a little new, and any kind of variation you can get within the same paradigm is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, you let go, you have a little fun, and then when everybody's having fun, I think, and you tell me, because you've actually been on a set, but when everybody's having fun, isn't it just infectious, and it's good spirits all around?
It makes things easier. It really does. It's, like, even if you have one person who's being a jerk or who doesn't like what you're doing, it really, like, that, I mean, happiness is infectious and also disappointment is infectious as well.
I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, I feel that way when I'm at work sometimes, where if we're having a really difficult night, boy, everybody feels it.
Yeah.
Or if we're having a really good night, boy, we're rocking it. Yeah, yeah. Now, I want to know, which character would you want to be in the Chaotica simulation? I don't know if I asked you that earlier.
Well, I did talk about how I'd be cool with being Buster just so I could see Proton do his thing. But now that I'm rethinking it, I'm like, do I want to be Proton or do I want to be Chaotica? I feel like it would be too exhausting to be a Chaotica because you'd have to be on all the time.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I think I'd be Proton. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you just want to get introduced to the program and see Tom Paris and Harry Kim in action, just watch them do their thing, which I think would be fun in and of itself. Maybe being the president of Earth would be a really good role for a starter.
I'd love to get a short web series of Dr. Chaotica, like Captain Proton.
Yes.
Like I really would.
Now, didn't Garrett Wong talk about that in our interview we had with him a couple months back?
You know, I honestly can't remember. I'm sure maybe he did.
It seems like a long time ago, but yeah, I think he did mention that, where if we could just get him and Robbie Duncan McNeil and get the blessing probably of CBS to do a web series, all they'd have to do is start a Kickstarter or something, and boy, we would be all over it. Now, the fan film guidelines, I don't know if they would apply to this or not, because if so, then it's null and void. It just couldn't happen. You can't have people who've actually professionally acted on Star Trek in so-called
right.
fan films. But I want that to happen so bad.
Yeah, I think they would need the blessing of CBS. But yeah, I think it would be fun. I think it'd be really cool. This is the best scene in the entire episode.
There's such good stuff here. His army of evil.
Yeah, when Janeway starts going over what's happening and Tom
right.
is just completely serious about it. He's like, yes, ma'am. His army of evil.
Mm-hmm.
So much fun.
Yeah, it's so good. It is. They got to play it so seriously about this very silly thing.
I really, like, there was one thing that I would do differently is I would not have Seven of Nine in the room. And,
no.
like, I would have them say, like, I would have somebody say, like, oh, where's Seven? And they said, they're like, oh, she's going to be here any minute. And so they're talking, and then Janeway says something like, oh, I wonder who you have in mind when he's talking about the Bride of Chaotica. She, like Seven walks in and hears that and immediately just walks out without saying a word.
That would be funny. However, I still really enjoy the way that they did it here.
Oh no, I'm not saying it takes anything away from this. I think this is my favorite scene in the episode. I'm just saying I think that would have been funny.
Then you are turning all the attention to Seven, and then Janeway's reaction is secondary to that. And I wouldn't want that taken away from her.
Fine, fine, fine.
Sorry.
We won't do it.
I love your idea, but I'm scrapping it.
Jeez.
Eh, you know I'm a harsh person. I'm going to tell you what I really think.
I love that. It's like, yeah, you got to knock out the lightning shield.
And there you go.
See, Seven's on board. She gets it.
Yeah.
Now, think about how hard it is to already, as a Star Trek actor, you have to learn all of this technobabble crap.
Oh,
you
yeah.
You have to have long strings of sentences that mean nothing to you. And then mm-hmm. in this episode, you have to relearn new technobabble, like 1930s
right.
technobabble.
How much are you rolling your eyes? Or is it so much easier than the usual? Because
yeah.
things like lasers and death rays, not quite the same as the magnetic constrictors. We just saw the moment of revelation. Oh, no, no, no. No, I'm not doing this.
So great. Now that was one of the highlights of Vegas was seeing Mulgrew speak live.
Oh yes.
I had never seen her live before. And it was
that
quite
just
a treat.
Me.
She is so utterly confident and commanding
oh, yeah.
and a little full of herself. But it's so appealing. It is so great to see someone with that much self-esteem and that much that a person who is convinced of her self-worth. It's very appealing and very infectious.
Keep in mind, that is her public persona. We don't know the real Kate Mulgrew. We just know her as she presents herself to us.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling she's a much more private person than she lets on normally. But
oh, I'm sure.
You know when she is in the room. She's got mm-hmm. that level of presence, for sure. And whether it is, it's not an act, but it is definitely a facet of her being that she's portraying to us. Even that, the way she does it, yes, it's incredibly inspirational because, man, I would just love to have, to be that kind of force of nature. Because she, all she has to do is walk out there and open her mouth. It all comes out as gold. And I'm just, I love you. You're great. Keep going. Yeah. Oh my God, you're amazing.
Wow. Okay. Do you need a room or what?
Sometimes.
But no, but honestly, like I feel like she could be a motivational speaker. I feel like she would be a no-nonsense person saying, get your life together, stop doubting yourself, you know, give yourself credit and move on.
We like, need her to be a life coach.
Yeah, like I feel like she could easily be the end of. Is she on an Apple box? She has to be on an Apple box.
She's gotta be, yes.
Okay, sorry, I got distracted there.
Yeah, she's not almost at eye level with Robert Duncan McNeil. She's not.
But she did a great job because I didn't even notice her step on the Apple box.
Yeah, it was pretty smooth. Good camera work, too.
Absolutely. But yeah, I loved the interaction between Janeway and Paris in this episode. I thought I wanted to see more. Like, yeah, there's so much height difference.
Come on. There's a few inches difference there.
But yeah, I love it when they interact, and not just because they had lizard babies.
Mm. Well, yeah, they had lizard babies, which I think did solidify a bond there. But no, there's more to it than just that.
Yeah,
it's not their one and only experience. But it didn't hurt. I'm sure it helped.
I love how offended she is. Not offended, but like taken aback when he mentions pheromones. She's like, I beg your pardon.
Yeah. What I do find funny is going back to Vegas. Sorry, still not done. Kate Mulgrew mentioned the lizard babies specifically at one of the panels. It's a very sexy moment. But Kate Mulgrew loves to talk about sex. She has to at least bring it up at least once, if not have a full panel on it. And if you watch on YouTube some of her older panels, boy, she can go hog wild a little bit. You get her wound up and she's just gonna go and go and go until the very end. It's kind of funny. She's been a little tamer in recent years, which I find disappointing. I really love it when they unleash, like with the TNG cast when they came out. It was Marina Sirtis, Jonathan Frakes, and Michael Dorn. And I think you said it was like they were like ADD kids. You could not rein them in.
No, yeah. Like, Frakes was literally just roaming the hall. But actually, you know, I think Mulgrew did kind of let loose a little bit in her second panel because she talked about, even though, like, okay, remember, like, let me preface this. Marina Sirtis said, like, she cut off somebody and said, listen, like, for those of you continually asking, like, what was it like to work with so-and-so, stop asking that question, because what are we going to say? We're being recorded. We're in front of thousands of people. Of course, we're going to say it was nice and everything like that. If that's your question, go sit down. But then we saw a Kate Mulgrew panel where she straight up, like, dissed the actor who played Tuvix.
Oh, that's true. She did, because somebody asked about Tuvix. And she said, meh, fart in the wind, don't care.
She totally volunteered that information too, because the guy was just asking about the ending of Tuvix. Like, what did you think about the ending of Tuvix where Janeway made the decision? And she volunteered the information saying, no, I was glad he died because I didn't really like the actor who played him.
Yeah.
It was insane.
So she kind of totally went against that. Okay. It was her complete prerogative to say that, I suppose, but wow.
Yeah, if you want to be that honest, be that honest. Who cares? Who cares? I mean, but it was just kind of funny to see that compare that and contrast.
Dichotomy. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, we are talking about two very outspoken women. Marina Sirtis, she does speak her mind more often than not, and I appreciate her bluntness. I'm actually trying to be more blunt in my own life and speak my mind. Just taking inspiration for that. Like, just speak your truth. Get it out there. You don't have to play nice. Let's just acknowledge this. But then, yeah, Mulgrew also, she'll tell you what she really thinks somehow.
Yeah.
Whether it's body language, whether it's verbal, you will know. She's very expressive.
I love her makeup in this episode.
Of all the things, the makeup, huh?
I think they did it so perfectly that it comes across so well, even in black and white.
Well, actually, I was going to say what I really love about it is how well it does look in black and white. It's very classic. You've got really dark lips. You've got the full eyes, the dark hair.
The really smoky contrast. Eyes that kind of go on an upward. Like, it's not a point like a Cleopatra thing.
Right.
But it does smoke and kind of go up and fade into her skin. So it kind of gives her this inquisitive look without looking like she's trying to be Egyptian.
Right. And it's in great contrast to her pretty pale skin.
Yes, absolutely.
All looks really
great. And of course, she has the window cleavage like a good Klingon would.
Yes, they'd be quite proud of that, wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think my favorite thing about the whole costume, though, aside from the beadwork, I mean, look at that stuff, is the nails. The level of detail they go on the freaking nails.
But yeah, speaking of the beadwork, I can't even imagine how long that would take to make.
How delicate that work had to have been, right? And
yeah.
How much time did that take? And I don't know, maybe cosplayers who have made their own could go into some detail about how they even do that, because it looks so intricate. Maybe it's really not. It's just certain types of fabric or something, but wow, either way.
Yeah, it's insane. It's you got to applaud the people who took the time. I mean, the costume designers, I don't think get enough credit on Star Trek.
No, not nearly enough. And especially in an episode like this, it takes a certain like next level of genius to really pull something like this off.
And this is on a weekly basis. Like, this isn't a...
Yeah.
This isn't...
Yeah, this isn't a movie.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, this isn't a movie. This isn't... This isn't something where you have months and months to plan. You got to do this kind of thing every single week. Yeah, you might get some heads up from the script before they start shooting, but it's much faster. Yeah.
Oh yeah, you're working at a breakneck pace for however many months of the year, and year after year, trying to be original had to have just been so mentally exhausting. I mean, I know if I have to maintain a level of creativity in my own work, after a while, if I don't get a little bit of a break to do something else and almost distract my mind so it can recharge, I'm depleted after a while.
Yeah, absolutely. It's true. And like to demand that type of creativity all the time,
it's phenomenal. I mean, we're talking the best of the best professionals here.
Now, I think her collar would probably be the hardest thing to make, because it looks like you have some framework, and it looks like an umbrella, like a clear umbrella on the back of her neck.
Yeah, kind of.
And here we go with the President of Earth.
Yes. Now, this, I think, would be a much easier cosplay. Just going to throw that out there, guys and gals.
Now, do you remember years ago they released a bunch of Chaotica posters?
Nope, I missed that.
And it was a... Like, I remember him being the President of Earth. Like, that was one of the posters.
Okay. No, this... If I saw this, I don't remember it at all. Listeners, my memory is awful. I barely remember what I did yesterday sometimes. That's why if you, like, send in a letter and you say, in episode 53, you guys said this, and could you elaborate? I'm like, we said that?
Cool. Yeah, oh my gosh, yeah. We're on, this is episode 179.
Yeah, I can't even remember what we said last week, so yeah. Mm-mm.
I love that he talks about Proton in such a positive light, and you can tell it's eating him up inside.
Because it's not him.
Yeah. He also, like, doesn't he mention about how he's, you know, he's a good medic to boot or something like that?
Yes, he just did that a moment ago.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, no matter how you feel about the official podcast of Star Trek, Engage, there was a really cool interview that the host had with Bob Picardo at Vegas. And so I think it's the latest episode of the podcast called Engage. Everyone should check it out, because Bob Picardo is just awesome. And he's just so funny. He's so witty.
Absolutely.
And you could tell he loves Star Trek. He knows Star Trek. And this wasn't just a role for him. And it's personified in this interview.
Absolutely. And he's become quite the advocate as well, just for space exploration. He's a member of the Planetary Society.
That's right. Yeah, with Bill Nye and yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Everyone should check it out. It's a lot of fun.
Right on. I've been meaning to listen to more Engage. I really haven't since the first couple of episodes came out. Gosh, what was it, in July? I'm so behind on my podcast listening. I didn't listen to hardly anything before Vegas, and I've been trying very hard to catch up since, but I listen to so many podcasts that that's not going so well. And I guess there was a really great interview with Nana Visitor as well on the Engage podcast. I need to listen to that.
I missed that one. Yeah, I need to listen to the Nana Visitor one because I haven't heard much from her, like outside of the episodes, and so I'd love to find out more.
Yeah, yeah. And she's fantastic. So I heard that was a very good interview. So we need to check that out.
Like, it's funny, like, see these people in person. Like, I didn't meet Nana Visitor, but I saw her in person. And some of these people, men and women both, are so striking in person.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Just wanted to say that. Yeah, those nails are so huge.
Right? I'm just admiring it right now. I'm sorry. This is bad commentary podcasting, but I'm just enamored right now. I also love the hair piece. The little spider she's got in her hair.
Yes.
You notice that? I want that.
Yeah. That's a lot of fun. I mean, like, it's just, there was one, I've done a few things, very few things, acting-wise. And it is so much easier to get in character if you have a crazy costume than if you're putting on a t-shirt and jeans. Yeah. It allows you to drop into the character so much easier if you have a different kind of costume or a period costume or an outlandish like sci-fi costume like this. It is just, or if you're in makeup, it's a treat to do it. And I'm looking at Mulgrew and seeing how much fun she's having, seeing herself just throw herself into the role. And you can tell that like that happened the moment she was in the dressing room and put on the costume.
Indeed. Indeed. I hadn't thought about that mindset about just how much a costume can make a difference. I wonder after a while getting into the spacesuit, if that kind of lost its magic after a little while for the actors because they were on set for 7 years. Was that the equivalent of a t-shirt and jeans after a while because they spent so much time in them?
I'm sure it was. I'm sure that it did wear off.
I don't know.
Like actually, Picardo actually did mention, like he said, they talked about Jeri Ryan's first Seven of Nine outfit and said that they had to change it, the silver one, because she had a hard time breathing.
Tight.
And then Picardo said something that I didn't know. He said, he's like, yeah, it was hard breathing in our jumpsuits too.
Oh, really?
And yeah. I was like, really? Like they must've been tight, like season one of Next Gen tight.
And the thing is I thought they developed the Voyager era suits to be a little more loose fitting and forgiving as opposed to those jumpsuits. Yeah.
That's what I thought too.
Because Patrick Stewart had a real hard time with that season one jumpsuit. He got a note from his doctor because of the back pain he got from that thing.
Yeah.
That's how bad those were. So if these weren't much better, I did hear that the boots were really awful on the feet. Mulgrew complained. Well, she didn't complain, but she's mentioned many times just how horrible her feet looked and felt after several years in those boots. But the uniforms, I always thought might be a little comfortable. I guess not.
I thought so too, because yeah, we always call them space pajamas, but apparently they're not.
That's a shame. I mean, honestly.
Now, one thing that Mulgrew said in a panel that I thought was really, really interesting and I thought was very, very much a part of her own personal character, her real Kate Mulgrew personal character, not Janeway character, where she talked about her work ethic and about how she doesn't like to go to her trailer during the workday. And she started talking about how she's like, you have all these young people who will go to their trailer, go and sleep, waste time. As soon as they yell cut, even if it's in between takes, they'll go to the trailer and come back. And they say they're like, okay, well, they have to call them on the radio. Then it takes them 10 or 15 minutes to move from their trailer to the set, get ready, stand, get lit and everything like that. And she said, that's why I just find a chair, sit in it. And if I want to sleep, that's where I sleep. So that if they say, Kate, I can pop up and I'm ready. And mm-hmm. I just thought that was such a fantastic attitude, because she said, if you're there to work, work.
Right.
You're like, yeah, you have 16-hour days, but you're getting paid for those 16-hour days. So if you're going to work, be there and work.
Yeah. I think she said, I call myself old school as a result of that ethic. So I wonder if she's done that her whole working life, because I don't think so. I think I remember hearing about her being in her trailer, at least for occasions on Voyager. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Maybe she's changed up, or maybe this is more common than she's let on in the past. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I'd like to elaborate. There's no hiding, or not hiding is not the right word, but there's times when you have to go to your trailer. Like if you have 2 hours before your next call, then yeah, you're gonna go to your trailer. You're not gonna sit in a chair.
Okay,
but if you have
yeah.
like 30 minutes or 15 minutes, you're not gonna go to your trailer.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Like that's, yeah, it takes probably, what, 5 minutes to get to the trailer in the first place, and you're gonna spend 5 minutes in there before you have to go back? No.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Can't be that great in there.
I've seen them. I've been in a few, and they're quite cramped, but it's better than being surrounded by everyone. Like if you... Yeah, it's like a small trailer. It's like you have a little couch and
uh-huh.
a really horrible bathroom that you like. It's that have signs that says "Don't drink the water from the faucet." You know, like
ew.
Yeah. I love when she whips the mic so perfect.
Yeah. Very overlooked part of this whole thing, just because there's so much other good stuff. But that really is great.
Now, didn't Proton do that in a previous episode or something? Or
did
like
he?
wasn't it's that a been callback?
It could have been. It's been a long, long time since I've watched Night, so.
Oh no, Chaotica did it. Chaotica did it in Night.
Did he? Okay.
That's who did it, not Proton.
Okay. Okay, cool. Now I've got a reason to watch Night again.
Oh, like you ever need a reason to watch Night again?
Well, I need to make the time is the thing. Because honestly, unless we're preparing for a podcast and I need to do research, I'm not deliberately watching a whole lot of Voyager right now, just because I've seen it before and there's other new content that I'm trying to get through, and it's not going well.
Okay, so maybe this is the moment where Biller is talking about, where she says, like Chakotay says they're going to shut down the holodecks, and Janeway mm-hmm. says, give me a minute, and she's letting Chaotica die. I know that Janeway's practical, but the thing is, though, is that, like, she's having fun and she wanted to, you know, I don't know, she wanted to live it up.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with this so far. I'm trying to see it from his point of view, but so far, nothing.
Yeah. You're wrong, Biller.
Yeah, sorry, you're wrong on this one, buddy.
Now, okay, so this episode ends... with a, it says the end, but then question mark.
Right.
You would be utterly surprised how often that happened. Like, since we've been talking about my film school experiences,
mm-hmm.
and you would be so shocked to know how many students, freshmen, thought that was a genius idea.
If only they knew. They didn't do their film and TV history 101, did they?
Well, no, they thought it was a funny callback, you know, like to the 30s and everything like that. They're like, oh, this will be really funny if I do this. Like, no one's ever thought of doing this before. You know, it's just...
Okay, yeah, come on. No.
And every single time I would see that, I would call them on it and say, why are you doing that? Your story's over. And they're like, yeah, but it's interesting if you do it this way. I was like, no, if you're going to have a cliffhanger, have a cliffhanger. Don't just mm-hmm. put a question mark on there because you think it'd be funny. And they looked at me like I was crazy. They're like, no, I'm keeping it. And then the professor would say the exact same thing and call them a loser as they should be. But in this realm, it totally makes sense because it's the episode itself is a callback to the 1930s.
Right. It's very stylistically appropriate. But then also, this is not the end of Captain Proton and Dr. Chaotica.
Yeah, exactly.
So right, well, there we it. Have it. This installment of the saga is now over.
But yet it's not the only thing we've been talking about on Trek.fm.
That's correct. And so here's a look at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
Please sit down. Let me get my eel. Yeah, right. It just slapped. See, now that would have been awesome if he had just like slapped the eel on Archer's face. And then Archer, that entire meaningful scene at the end of the episode, the discussion between Archer and T'Pol, if he had had a giant eel stuck to his
body
the
entire
time.
The orb.
And what's so great, I think, about Star Trek Deep Space Nine is, especially with Sisko, is you get to watch somebody slowly become a believer in a faith, and it's shown as being reasonable.
Literary Treks.
The big difference is when you're doing nonfiction books, we do a lot of interviewing, and the interviewing requires a lot of transcribing tapes. And that's possibly the most miserable job one could ever run into. It's a real task.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all the shows. We have so much Trek Talk coming to you every single day of the week. And on TTJ, we want to thank our associate producers for helping us out on Patreon. These awesome people are Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, Bruce Lish, Dante Hopkins, Brian Belisio, and Kay Janeway. Thank you guys very much for supporting TTJ. And if you want to support us as well, go to patreon.com/trekfm and consider becoming a monthly subscriber. There's cool perks in it for you, like becoming an associate producer, things like wallpapers and ringtones, cool little nifty things like that, and more. So check that out, and we would appreciate all of your help because we're a listener-supported network. Now, all of that said, we've wrapped this one up, and we get to go until next week. And just like they ended the Captain Proton episode, we're going to leave it with a question mark, aren't we?
That's right.
Yeah, so there. So until then, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!